So you have in the graph we have three lines. One line is because last time there was I repeat the experiment. Let me explain first. I repeat the experiment because the last one I was doing just reads and I was doing just writes.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the concerns we have is that in the case of reads, it was probably the best case for reads because we didn't have to. Although we pick some pages, we don't have to write to memory. And in the write case, it's the worst case because we have to load and evict, which also have to write. So so there is a lot of work there. So what I did was to mix both read and write with 50-50 chance of happening one or the other. And then I separate read latencies from write latencies, so that the red and the green line.
Okay.
So it's basically the same as before. It's no different, I think.
But this is there is difference here, right? There's some difference here. What about the, what is worse to read?
Yeah, that's the other line I plot, which is really off because it's better than the.
What is the worst read?
The worst read is the worst case read, which. What I did is that each time I access a page, or sorry, a line, I count the time, and that's the time I print. But after that, I print I write the line, right? So next time that line is, or when that line wants to be evicted. It needs to be written to the memory. Does that make sense? I mean, you know, in the other case, I only have.
Why is that the worst case?
Because I am expanding. Because now
if
the eviction includes a write.
Evictions always include writes.
Not necessarily. If the line is clean, you don't need to write.
In this case, the eviction always includes a write.
In the worst case, it always includes that's what I'm assuming. Okay. That always includes a write because I'm dirtying the page at right after I read it.
Okay.
Yeah, but the odd thing is that it has a better performance than the other.
You can forget about that at the time. You
okay.
don't have time for that.
Yeah.
We can use these new latency numbers for the reads and writes.
Yeah.
And about the experiments, how were you able to do any experiments?
No. At this point, I'm trying to. I was doing this because I didn't know. At some point. We said that probably we should include these numbers in the simulation itself. I mean, apart from
mm-hmm.
adding up the idle
mm-hmm.
time, we should probably also add up this. But I don't know if this, that's really required.
Maybe not.
I was thinking that probably not,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yeah, we can also post-process stuff later on.
Okay. What else? The other thing I want to do is about there is a graph of the motivation with the required bandwidth for the SSD. So I want to do that and then the experiment.
No, which one are you talking about?
I'm talking about the
last graph.
I think it's the last graph.
But that's with a disk.
No. There is a graph we need to. It's a bar graph where we show the required SSD bandwidth or the residual bandwidth for the call data. Right?
Okay.
That makes sense.
But that's. I think we already did that. Didn't we already?
No. What we said is that there was some problems in terms of how realistic was to do what we were doing at the beginning. That is to separate.
Cold
access from. So what we realized is it's probably better to use the simulator, which already have a replacement algorithm and so on, and make clear which ones will go to. I mean, with that experiment, we will see clearly how much bandwidth we need.
Okay? Yeah. But does that include cleaning bandwidth also? I guess not, right?
No.
It's only the eviction bandwidth.
Yeah.
And the page fault bandwidth, the demand paging bandwidth.
Yes. That's something, yeah. Yeah, but, you know, even in that experiment, there is this problem that I'm planning to do that experiment without waiting, because probably it doesn't make sense, right? Not having waiting time. But the problem is that in that case, the background thread won't be able to run and won't be able to clean or periodically, you know, clean the first few pages. So probably we will have more writes than actually will happen in the...
Well, first of all, we are, you mean the eviction thread?
Yeah.
Is the eviction thread. So, yeah, depends on what we want to show in that graph. If we want to show just demand paging bandwidth, then we could do that. In fact, that's what we are doing currently in the approximate version of that graph. We just take the lower 80% and find out how much is the bandwidth required to access the lower 80%, right? We are assuming perfect replacement in some sense because we are always accessing the lower 80%. We never touching the higher 10-20%. But all of it is demand paging bandwidth only. We are not taking into account any of the eviction bandwidth.
Right.
So in your experiments, you can actually also take into account the eviction bandwidth, how much data is being evicted from it.
Yeah.
So each time you have a demand paging request, not necessarily you're evicting because the page could be clean, right? So, but you, because of your simulator, you know whether the page is clean or dirty and whether you need to evict or not. So you could also take into account the demand, the eviction bandwidth.
Yeah, so probably what we can do is that we can add an additional bar where we have perfect replacement, and where we have the worst case, which is all the evictions require one write.
I don't think we need that. I think if we just show the eviction bandwidth plus the demand paging bandwidth, that's good enough.
Plus right? The demand paging.
With LRU, whatever it is, whatever replacement you have.
Because
we just need an estimate of the bandwidth.
So I just should...
What you can do is, you already, I think, have the numbers. How many pages got demand paged, how many pages got evicted, and all you need to do is add up all the page data and divide it by the total execution time to get the bandwidth.
Okay.
Right.
But I guess then I don't have to do any additional...
And this is what I think we should do.
Yeah,
it's just
because I have all the...
You already have
numbers,
all the data.
All the times, but every access.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. So if I have the time, I have all the times. I also have all.
What I was going to suggest is there are two kinds of different bandwidths that we can talk about. One is sort of average bandwidth over the entire execution.
Okay.
It's going to be much lower than
the peaks.
Right. So the question is, what are we showing in this graph, right? Do we show the peak bandwidth requirements, the average bandwidth requirements, or something else? You already have the data for the average bandwidth requirements, right? Because just the sum of all the data that you read or wrote divided by total time of the experiment.
Sure.
So you have that number.
Yeah.
For the instantaneous or the peak bandwidths, you need more information. You need to sort of have bandwidth numbers in every small interval of time, say 10 milliseconds or whatever is the granularity. That's going to be more tricky to get.
Should we do something like CVF of inter-request times? That inter-request time can be translated to bandwidth.
CDF of inter-request times. Yeah, I guess we could do that. Yeah. But that would be emulated time.
Yeah.
The emulated times. Yeah, it could be done. The problem is our evictions are all batched. So the inter-request time for the evictions are going to be zero. So we'll have infinite bandwidth requirement for...
Yeah, but I mean, we don't want to show the bandwidth of what we achieved. We want to show the bandwidth that we were required to serve, right?
So you mean demand paging bandwidth? Yes, the demand paging bandwidth.
Yes. No, I mean, the bandwidth that that we are asking the device to provide to serve. Not the actual bandwidth we are seeing on the device.
So one thing which we could do is we could just multiply the demand paging bandwidth by 2, which makes the assumption that all demand paging requests are preceded by eviction. So
that's replacement
is dirty.
Yeah, that's the worst case I was talking about.
Yeah, we could do that. Because if we do show the CDF of inter-request times for evictions based on how we are implementing it right now, then we'll have zero inter-request times because you do multiple evictions back-to-back.
Yeah.
Right? And that's not a realistic inter-request time. It's just the way we optimize this stuff, right?
Okay.
So we could just do twice the... So the inter-request time, distribution of inter-request time would just be demand paging inter-request times. And we could do a CDF of that. So do you have those numbers as well? Do you know when you are demand paging?
I have all the information for each read in each page file.
Mm-hmm. Including time and location and all that.
Including, I don't know if location, but at least including the number of pages I'm reading.
But you only read one. Mm-hmm.
The timestamp of the timestamp of the emulator and the timestamp of the trace of the of the trace entry that generates the page file.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we need more information on that one.
Whether the page was dirty or clean, maybe. Do you need that information?
I have that information, but I don't know if I need that. I mean, because we're assuming the worst case. So we don't need that, right? We're saying that for every read, we have a write.
No, I'm just thinking about future possible requirements. Other data that
okay.
you might need. Anyway, so for this we can cold bandwidth, we can just do twice, and we could do inter-request times. And each request is 4K.
Something like dump the traces, I mean the new traces, and let's say I work on those traces.
Dump the new traces?
I mean the new accesses to memory, the new accesses.
The outputs. The output of your execution.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the output of the execution doesn't include that.
What I'm saying is instead of doing all that stuff in your code, you could something like divide work, you dump the traces and I plot them. I do this stuff, for example.
Yeah.
Well, whatever's easier for you.
Yeah, I guess we can do that. But what I'm wondering is if I have all the information we need. So I guess the only thing...
Let's get some information and start plotting these graphs, because until we start plotting some of these graphs, we won't really know what information is missing.
Okay.
Right? So we need to start plotting some graphs.
Okay.
And as we plot, if we miss some data, then we know what we need to get more.
Okay.
Right? Because there is, as you say, a lot of data.
Yes. Actually, it already have some data, I guess, with LRU and cost benefit.
Mm-hmm. Think about the graphs that we need for the motivation, the graphs that we need for the experiments.
Okay.
And start plotting some of those graphs, even if it is only for one workload.
Yeah.
So we have, you know, when you run the other workloads, you have provisions to collect any missing data that we need.
Okay. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's a good plan. So make
start plotting the graphs.
Start plotting graphs.
Yeah.
And see what information we need to.
Exactly. Yeah. Because we have a whole bunch of different things that we want to show in the and maybe you already have for one, at least for the small postmark, if you have one execution, you should be able to plot all the graphs for that specific point, which is the postmark small, right? So that's what I would recommend you to do.
Okay.
Next. Okay, so Ricardo, were you able to redo the thing with for the memory power? There was some page hit with 8K.
Yeah. I dropped IAM out to action.
Okay, so he has that information.
Yeah.
Okay. So how do the numbers look?
Bit higher, but I don't
know. It's not too different.
Not too different.
Mm-hmm.
There are some around 70%, some around 90%. I would say the average is 80 something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 90, well, almost 90.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to interpret that.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean that was something which I was confused about during our conference call: how to compute the page hit percentage, whether in cache lines or words. And it's still not clear.
At least it's easier to do in cache lines because we have everything already.
I mean, if we do it in words, I think what it means is that the because you have, when you access a single word, you read multiple words in the same row for guaranteed, because you need to load the entire cache line, then the hit ratio is actually going to be higher than what we see in these numbers.
Yeah, but at the end, the memory wouldn't notice, right? It's the same for the device.
No, the power will change, right? I mean, the power numbers in our spreadsheet will change.
But even if you use only one word or all the words of a line, the same operations will be done, right? The whole line will end up in the cache.
Right, the whole line will end up in the cache, but then the page hit percentage will be different.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is the exact same number of operations from the point of view of the memory will be done, whether only one word is accessed or all the words are accessed.
True. I guess what I'm trying to say is that what is the definition of page hit percentage? What is that's what I'm currently unclear about.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that, I mean, power depends really on the number of type of operations the memory is doing.
Right.
So if the same operations are being done, whether you read a word or all the words in the line, shouldn't matter. Right?
It matters because
the ordering changes.
The ordering, so I'm not really talking about ordering differently, but what I'm saying is that depending on how page hit percentage is defined, our numbers are either correct or incorrect.
Yes.
And so which means that our power calculations are either correct or incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm saying.
Yes.
Right. I understand that whether you access one word or multiple words, you're going to load the entire line. So the behavior of memory doesn't change. I understand that completely.
Yeah.
But I'm saying how we are using the spreadsheet, whether it's correct or not, is the question. And that depends on whether we are interpreting the page hit percentage correctly or not.
Okay. So what I'm saying is that the people that did the spreadsheet, I think they didn't mean to complicate stuff, right? I mean, the simple case is realign. Right? Well, that's...
No, I guess probably the answer is in the motivation of why this number is needed, right? I think a chart a chat in some meeting, he mentioned that this number is needed because of the power required for an activation of something. So I guess if you read the word or you read the line, the activation will be exactly the same, which means that the power at the end will be the same.
The power per operation is different. Per operation, depending on how you define the operation.
Right? Okay.
If you define the operation as reading of a single word, then the power per operation is going to be different. And because you do one activation, you read multiple words, or you do one activation or you and you read a single word.
I see what you mean. But then, so when you say that instead of the word granularity, you mean is that the same word is accessed twice?
No.
So when you're reading in words, and is the next word you're reading in the same row or not?
Okay.
That's my question. How is the page hit percentage calculated? Is it at the granularity of reading a word and reading the next word? Is that a hit? Or you're reading an entire line and reading the next line and that is a hit?
Mm.
And those two calculations are different calculations.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking that it's the word, the first one.
I intuitively also thought it was a word because you transfer a word of data at a time. When you do an activation, because there is...
But
the thing is that does memory allow you to transfer a single word and not the rest of the words in the line? Can I activate a row, transfer a single word, and then deactivate the row? Can I do that?
Mm.
Or am I forced to read the entire line after I activate a row?
If you read the entire line, then you don't access the memory anymore for that line, right? Because you're now in the cache.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, but the question is, what is allowed by memory chips, you know, by the controller, memory controller? Does the memory controller allow reading a single word at a time, or does it necessarily read an entire cache line always? And also, does memory chip does the memory allow you to read a single word separately, or it also needs you to read an entire line? Right, that's the real question. Because if I can read only a single word, then my power is going to be very different than when I'm reading cache lines all the time. Right?
Yeah. If you were able to read a single word, then this optimization, like critical words first, wouldn't exist.
Why do you say that?
Because you will just request the word you want.
Because memory allows you to read a word doesn't mean that you always read a word. You could read an entire line, right? So the question is, what does memory allow? Does it allow reading a single word at a time? Can I activate a row, read a word, and then deactivate the row and switch to another row? Can I do that? And if I can do that, how can I calculate power consumption according to this spreadsheet? So you think that by default memory is always read in cache lines?
Yeah.
That's your intuition.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we did have this discussion on the conference call also.
Yeah.
So I'm willing to go with that intuition, but I think at the same time we need to confirm that intuition.
How?
I don't know. By looking at some other
spreadsheets
from Micron or whatever it is that. Or data sheets from other memory manufacturers.
For example, I know this is a fact. I know that when you can, I mean, there is this problem that if you write only a word, you need to load the whole line and then write it.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's for sure.
I know that's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, at least for write, it seems that you cannot write a single word.
Let's say I don't have any cash.
Yeah.
Can I use memory or not?
I guess, I don't know.
So, if there is no cash, am I still going to access in cash line? No, because in my register, I can store only one word, right?
Yeah.
So, that's the question. But maybe that's a stupid question because there's no, you know, these systems, such systems do not exist and there is no reason for designing for such systems, right? But that's sort of the devil's advocate question. What if there are no caches? Can I still use the same memory chips?
So this is more than a limitation on memory, can be also a limitation in caches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if there is a limitation in either of them,
yeah,
we are still limited to...
Limited, but the question is, are those guys who are doing the spreadsheet, are they limited or not, right?
Yeah.
So what are they assuming? Are they assuming that memory is being read in a word granularity, or are they assuming memory is being read at the cache line?
Well, they would assume the most common case, right?
Yeah. So maybe they assume that memory is read in cache line granularity, and the question then is, the most important question is the page hit percentage. Is it defined at the cache line granularity or not? Right. If it is defined at the different granularity, then again we have a problem. So I think the real question we need to answer is the definition of the page hit percentage. No, precise definition. What actually that means? If we have that definition, then we won't have these discussions. Because there will be no confusion. Problem is that definition is not clear.
Well, what we could do is, we could try both, and we'll have very different power models.
Mm-hmm.
And we can check with those guys that use this power model and see which one of both makes more sense. Right?
Yeah, that's one way. Would be nicer if we can actually get the actual definition of the page hit person.
Yeah.
We could tag the developers
of the spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I mean, we don't want the absolute power value, right? We just want to compare with our stuff, without our stuff. So I guess in both cases we'll still see small, big, whatever differences. That's all we care, right? But the problem is that maybe in one way or the other we see more gap or less gap. But at the end it's the same. I mean,
we don't know. Well, for now I'm okay with that. We go with your intuition. It seems to be matched with Akshat's intuition also. And but let's try to verify this information.
Okay.
So we should start making a table of power consumption for these various workloads.
Yeah.
By populating the data sheet. So Akshat is doing that.
I don't know. I can do it.
So did you hear back from him about the numbers?
No. Actually, I'm not sure if he got it. I left him a Skype message.
So that assumes that he's going to log on to Skype every day. I only log on to Skype when we have meetings. So.
Okay.
I have no other reason to log on to Skype.
Okay, so I'll write him.
Send him an email and also, you know, send CC us.
Okay.
I think that's...
Okay. Other stuff from my side is those benchmarks. Those benchmarks, the capo, are very easy to use. So my problem with picking two or three from them is not, it was really set up in the stuff, but just a matter of, I mean, the binaries are ready to run.
Mm-hmm.
So I can run all that.
drawings are, I guess, then the problems with the presentation space. I guess we don't have.
I mean, I can run up all of them and then we pick whatever looks nice.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Let's not run all of them. Let's try to run the ones that are more interesting.
Because they're very short.
Descriptions for.
They're very short.
They're very short?
Yeah. That's also bad.
Oh, that's a problem, yeah.
Or maybe it's configurable. I don't know, but they're very short.
Yeah, look into the configuration parameters. Also, look.
2 minutes. 1 minute.
So, can you send an email with a link to wherever the benchmarks are described?
Okay.
So we can help you identify which ones are more interesting.
Okay.
Are there any which are office-like workloads? No?
No.
So what are these workloads?
Some of them are, there is an Apache workload.
Oh, that's a server.
Yeah. There is a stock market something workload. There are some workloads about parsing XML.
Developers workload.
Yeah, there is a developer workload that uses Eclipse.
For that, do you need Eclipse?
Excuse me?
Do you need to install Eclipse or
no?
Or no?
It I'm doesn't sorry. Even open a GUI. I don't know why it does.
A GUI.
That's something.
There is also another one that generates a parser based on a.
No, the Eclipse GUI is interesting, but we need to create longer executions because otherwise the SSD will not go into steady state at all.
Okay. And all of them are Java.
All of them are Java.
Yeah. I don't know if that's bad or good. That makes it more mobile-like,
I guess. That's fine, I guess. Java or C doesn't matter.
Are there any... I'm thinking about the office workload. Are there any workloads with LaTeX? Something like some... benchmark that edits some document.
In that suite? No.
Not in that suite, I'm saying in general.
So I think for the Bigcapo benchmarks, we need to identify benchmarks which are client benchmarks, mobile user benchmarks.
We don't want more servers.
We don't want Apache or those stuff because those are server side benchmarks. We already have enough of them.
Okay.
Right? And we want benchmarks that run for at least 15 minutes.
Okay.
All right. Otherwise, it's going to be difficult to evaluate using them.
Okay. Another thing about what you said about Java, I was thinking the use of a garbage collector might really affect us, right?
But that's a real workload too. So
okay.
If you're designing for something...
No, what I'm saying is something that could be investigated. Now, or maybe not.
What do you mean?
I mean, think more about it. The effect of having garbage collector or something like that. Because it's leaving a lot of pages used but unused.
I see. Yeah, that's interesting because garbage collector is going to touch all those pages which are no longer in use.
Yes.
Or maybe not. I don't know if it's going to access anything in those pages. Maybe it's only accessing some metadata structures, not really those pages.
Yeah. If that is the case, it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think we can go in that direction at this point.
Okay.
We have too many things to still investigate.
About the traces, what I'm dumping is for the anonymous, non-anonymous stuff is the
Sorry. Do you know where I can find Maury and Brian?
So today the office closed at 1 o'clock, so they're all left.
This is the office here?
No, it's indoors, inside. You have to, is that an evaluation?
Yeah.
You have to give it to her personally.
Are they here on Friday?
No, it's the Thanksgiving weekend, at least this Friday.
Okay.
They'll be here next Friday.
All right, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So what I'm dumping is, I mean, all I could get is whether this access is a read-write or an instruction fetch, and the current value of the segment selector that you, well, what it is kernel or user. That's all we have.
Okay.
So with that, can we say anonymous, not anonymous?
Yeah, so if it's user mode, we can assume it's non-anonymous, assuming that there is no memory mapping.
Yes.
If it's kernel mode, then we can, and the problem is that we cannot distinguish between file cache and the other pages of the,
yes.
Right? Is there a way to say, okay, the code, we can maybe distinguish the code segment from the address information. Say, okay, the code segment of the kernel is in this location or the physical memory, and therefore the physical,
yes,
address is smaller than this value.
Do you have the executable bit or
no? No, there is,
okay.
At the page level there is no such thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
At the segment level.
At the segment level.
Yeah, so we could approximate it that way. Say all user level or user mode pages are anonymous, and all actually kernel mode pages are non-anonymous. We could do it that
way.
It's a coarse approximation.
Okay, and another thing, I didn't know this. It turns out that the formal definition of anonymous pages, all the memory is divided in virtual memory areas.
Mm-hmm.
But not all the memory. There are many pages like kernel pages or DMA that are not mapped as VMAs. But for VMAs, there are some that are backed in,
mm-hmm,
in a file,
mm-hmm,
and there are others that are not.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the
anonymous.
Yeah. So they're anonymous, file backed,
mm-hmm,
and whatever other stuff. And this other stuff, I don't know exactly what it is.
Yeah, I mean, doing a coarse-grained differentiation of memory of the kernel is going to be hard. Similarly for user also, right? If we know, for instance, even in user space, if we know the location of the core segment and the initialized data segment, and those are non-anonymous, actually, because they are mapped to files.
Yeah.
But we don't have that information.
Yeah.
So that it would be necessary to go into the OS and find the memory mapping, and
yeah,
it becomes a little bit more crazy.
Well, while I was checking on that. I mean, the approach for doing on the kernel is you have to look for the VMA. There is a function find VMA given an address,
mm-hmm,
and it returns a VMA. On the VMA struct, there is this field called the inode, and that points to the file back stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's null,
mm-hmm,
it means that it's anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
So I was trying to call the function directly from the VMA, from QM, and that was a lot of mess. So the problem is that you can call some functions, but the problem is that these functions might
call them,
might get state from the,
mm,
from, I mean, read registers,
mm,
or stuff like that. So I cannot call functions directly. So what I'm doing is
save. You can call save functions, but most functions,
exactly,
are probably not.
Yes.
Safe.
Yeah. So I'm copy pasting this code inside QEMU to, instead of accessing the virtual,
mm-hmm,
instead of accessing the real registers, because at this level this code thinks it's accessing the virtual register, but instead it's accessing the real stuff. So I need to change that to access the virtual stuff.
Yeah, that sounds very messy though.
Yeah, it's very messy, but it's just, there is, the thing of searching the VMA, that doesn't need anything. The problem is that there is this search, this tree for VMAs for each process.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not being able to get the current process and point it to the VMA structure.
Mm-hmm.
But once that's working, I guess that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm doing this while I'm tracing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like a time-consuming activity.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah, I would recommend not to spend too much time on it at this point, because I think...
Yeah, I recommend that myself.
Hey, but you don't follow your own recommendation.
Yeah,
my recommendation is pretty much useless.
But I was thinking, I mean, that's a very strong point we're making, right? Because it's
not
a regular swap, and it's not, I mean, it's different than this old, what these other guys did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what differentiates us.
Mm-hmm.
So that point should we make
nicely. That's one aspect, but we're also talking about techniques for managing the flash.
Well, yes.
Right, to have allocation, replacement, and things like that. So there's some novelty in those directions also.
Yeah,
but it would be really nice to make a strong case to say flash cache is good, but it's not as good as it can actually be.
That would be very nice.
That would be a great statement to make. But for that, we'll need this anonymous, non-anonymous stuff, and we'll have
but
to deal
also,
with the approximation.
I mean, there is one thing they do that I think is completely wrong. Is that they actually the flash, the way they manage the flash is that it's exactly a cache for the disk.
Yeah.
And which is fine for reads, but it's not really good for writes. Right? Because all writes that are happening in the page cache go through the flash first, which is something we are not doing, right?
We're not doing that?
No.
Yeah, but same something, right? Like,
because all the updates of the page cache are happening in the memory, right?
And in their case, there are no pages of the page cache that are in memory at all.
Exactly, for instance. That's what I understood from the paper.
I think you're right.
And I think that's a big problem.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, I mean, trying to be even more general, whether we use flash or not, just the statement of saying regular OSs should swap more than what they do is a good idea, that would be very nice to say, right?
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point.
Or maybe we see that. That's not, I mean, most likely that would be not the case for all workloads, but at least showing that that's good for some type of application. So that would be very nice, I guess.
So what you're saying is that if we show there are some pages in memory that are not as important as the pages are of the page cache, then those pages should be put to some secondary storage in favor of pages from the page cache. So the question right now is, which gets evicted?
Yes.
Does the page cache, if the system is under severe memory pressure, what happens? I think I don't know the answer to that. It would be good to actually understand.
I think what happens is that the anonymous pages have priority over the page cache. Because I think the page cache is only use the memory that otherwise won't be used. Right? Just like the free memory the system has, and if there is other thing that needs memory, the first one to go is one of the page cache.
But that's really bad, because shared libraries are part of the page cache, right? I mean, they're memory mapped. So is there sort of an exception for such?
But then NLRU comes into play, right?
No, I think there is an option in Nmap, for instance, where you can, I there is a term for that.
Unswappable.
You can lock the page memory. But there is a, anyway, I don't remember the name exactly, but you can lock the patient memory, and that won't be trouble. So I'm guessing that's what they do for shared libraries.
Mm-hmm. I see. That makes sense. Especially if the page cache pages get thrown away before the anonymous pages.
Yeah.
So there is a priority scheme there then.
I think I read that in the Understanding Linux Kernel book at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But probably we can recheck that. That's true. I think that the way, because I was reading about the swap, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the way the eviction was happening, they have a list of priorities. So first you look for these pages, then you look for these other pages, and so on, to evict. Right?
Mm-hmm. I see.
But yeah. that kind of stuff shouldn't be fixed.
Shouldn't be fixed?
Yeah. I mean, in that case, they're fixing. That's part of
a fixed
policy. Right? That should be, you know, dynamic. Right. Should be the case that memory, I mean,
that's
more important to keep.
What you're saying is that all memory should compete for memory.
Exactly, like we're doing, right?
Yeah, that's what we're doing.
I wonder what's happening with these guys. And they're supposed to come at 4 o'clock.
Maybe they're waiting for us to come down. Because we were waiting for Sajid to come down.
I see. Okay.
Yeah,
so in that case, then maybe you should go down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I know that Leonardo has a class at 5 o'clock.
Okay.
So, all right, so we're meeting on Monday, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll let you know because I might not be able to make it to that meeting, but for now, let's keep it active.
Okay.
And if there is a change, I'll send you an email.
Okay.
All right, thanks.